1, 2, 3. That was too close, actually.
Wasn't like that great? That. It was great. I clapped it a little early just to make, just so I can we can be closer on your end.
Okay.
No. I think that's how Jeremy likes it. Jeremy likes
it. I was going to say, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Jeremy's problem.
He knows how to scooch stuff around to make us sound good.
If he doesn't, I don't even know what he's doing here.
One of the, you know, one of these one of these weeks, I really want Jeremy to recut the whole episode like an Aqua Teen episode. To where there's like,
in which sense?
Like zero delay between any statement from either of us, just right on top of one another. Just
chopping all that up.
And the only delays are like unnecessarily long delays when there shouldn't be.
Where you just know we're staring at each other.
Exactly. Yeah. I would love, even just a segment. I would love to see what Jeremy can do with that. A bit of a wizard.
Oh, man. It's going to be our 1 hour episode will be 20 minutes long.
Ah, there's the rub. Mm-hmm. We'll have to have Megan come back.
Some people loved that episode.
I bet.
Some people loved those episodes. Mm-hmm.
Those many, people, many episodes.
Some people sent me emails to the contrary. And we are grateful for all feedback here at Is This a Ghost? So thank you. Absolutely. And message received. Mm-hmm. But we do love Megan. I don't think it was a Megan thing.
It was not a Megan thing. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, it did take us, it did set a new record in how long it took us to get to the ghost. This time it was 2 weeks.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's see. Let's get started here.
Okay.
With the real intro. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously and may have an ear infection. What's happening to your ear?
No, I picked it up. It's good. It's no, no longer infected.
I don't have any interest in becoming a medical podcast this week, so we are going to move right on.
We're going to become the sawbones of gross things in your ear. That's what we're going to be.
Hey, I got a text from my brother-in-law tonight.
Oh, really? Was I in it?
Well, not at first. First, he said, hey, guess who I'm sitting next to? And I thought, I don't know. That's a pretty wide open sandbox.
Albert Pujols.
It could have been literally anybody except me. Mm-hmm. That's all I had eyes on at that moment was me. Mm-hmm. So I said, I don't know, Mandy, because that's my sister. That's right. His wife. Yeah. That felt like a pretty good bet.
Yeah. I mean, even money right there.
Yeah, I think so. Then he sent me a picture of you, your mug.
Because he was sitting next to me. Yeah.
He was sitting next to you. So mm-hmm. Now you and Jay don't like hang out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a surprising thing to see. And also we were supposed to start podcasting an hour ago. So every bit of this was surprising. Now, what were you and Jay doing together?
Oh, Jay and I are both softball coaches. I don't know if you're aware of that.
He talks about it endlessly.
Yeah. So
I didn't know you were in the same, you know,
we didn't used to be, but his league folded. So now he's in my league.
Hey, yeah. I'll tell you what, probably because he was in charge of it. Yeah.
And next year, my league will fold.
And it's not that the kids didn't want to play anymore. It's not that they did badly. It's just that all the other parents coaching the other teams were like, we cannot fucking come back and listen to Jay talk anymore. So this league is over.
There's a reason they put the dugouts as far away from each other as they do.
So you and Jay are your coach buddies now.
We are colleagues and competitors. Wow. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Just like in regular life.
I think so. That was a fun little discovery tonight. It's a small town. Small town.
Now, where was Mandy?
She was sitting right next to him.
God damn it. I knew it. Son of a bitch. Oh, boy. What else are we going to talk about? Is anything cool going on?
The AI world was set topsy-turvy today. That was exciting.
It sure was.
Let's see. You're almost done with dry January, I guess.
Yeah, but I think I might extend it. This is going to be a dry. Maybe it's going to be dry 25.
Buddy. I didn't want to say anything.
We all know that's not true.
I didn't want to say anything.
I don't think I'm going to extend it a little. I'm going to keep it. after January, it's no longer the pressure to right. dry is not there. But I gotta tell you, it's weird. So here's the thing that I've noticed throughout dry January. I feel better.
Oh, see, that's like where the, when you that's yeah. That's the scam right there. That's the scam they pull on you.
I don't know. It's just like it's now that I've had more than one day in a row without a hangover. It's like I don't know. It's kind of nice to not have hangover. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think about it.
Yeah. You know what's better than that, though?
What's that?
The old-fashioned pre-made bottle from High West. Oh.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say like Jim Beam or something. Mm-hmm. My face was ready.
No, no.
High West, I would take. Okay,
it's on sale. Right. It's on sale, just so you know.
Just like that eggnog was once upon a month. And that was a mistake.
A little bit of that down in the crisper still. I might just have to rescue that if I run out of this bottle tonight.
Well, having all said all that, February 1st, we're celebrating Aaron's birthday, and there's already an alcohol component to that.
Yeah.
So.
I think I'm extending it minutes into February.
Maybe up to 8 hours? I don't know. We'll see how the day goes. So, yeah. You have anything else you want to run through before we dive in?
Boy, no. I mean, the world kind of continues to, spiral. Spiral down into the depths.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think I have a news update about that. Now we go to our crypto desk for a brand new update on Ghost Coin. You may remember last week we teased our new meme coin here. It is this a Ghost Coin. And I have an update for you, Patrick. I thought you might appreciate hearing our update. So as you know, Pat, when we built, which I'm going to call $Ghost, I think, just so everyone listening knows, I know how to write it. When we did build $Ghost, we decided to make it a very AI-forward meme coin. Mm-hmm. And the AI component was key to the whole thing.
Right.
Work, yeah. And you asked, how would that work? And I said,
You said I didn't need to know. Right.
Don't worry about it. I said, Patrick, the less you know about Ghost Coin, the better. So the good news that we had this morning we launched it. We launched Ghost Coin, 7 a.m. Eastern. It was up and I wish you could have been there. There was sparkling water we popped in celebration.
Really? God, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it was
nice. I was at my job, though.
Oh, too bad. Man. You didn't have to be because we were billionaires.
Really?
Billionaires.
Oh, you know me. What am I doing here?
Well, we have to be. Stay there. Don't leave because the story continues. As you referenced earlier, China released the DeepSeek AI model, and the whole AI world did kind of collapse today, and that includes $Ghost, which was, as I mentioned, very AI powered. And we lost everything.
Okay.
Not just the assets that I put into Ghost Coin, and not just the assets that I asked Amy to forward me from your bank account to put into Ghost Coin on your behalf.
I wonder where that money went. Okay.
Yeah, that's where it went. Now it's gone. Okay. And also all your other assets are gone. The AI thing really was more consuming than I thought. So you've lost everything.
You know, the only way out of this, the only way out is to dig deeper. That's the only way out of this. I think $Ghost needs to be driven with a different technology.
Okay.
Starting today, $Ghost will be driven by the technology behind 3D televisions. I think that's
okay.
I think that's a wave of the future.
Okay.
I think
3D Ghost Coin.
3D Ghost Coin, exactly. It's a ghost coin. You can perceive it. You can wave your hand around it. Exactly. Much like its namesake, the ghost.
Well, I was feeling down in the dumps about 5 minutes ago. I'm feeling great again. We're back on top and I can feel it. Now, I just want to make sure we're going to have to launch that tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll do an update
as soon as we
next
can.
Week.
Yes.
So, yeah, yeah. But the markets are obviously closed right now.
Even the ghost markets, which is weird because I thought they'd be open this time, but.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be nocturnal. No, they're diurnal as the rest of us. It's really surprising. So, Patrick, if you hear knocking on your door upstairs, that may be the ghosts who have arrived to repossess your house.
Okay.
Did you get the joke in there? the ghost.
Okay. Yeah, that's
something. Fine. It's fine. It's, you know, it wasn't.
We can cut in some laughter later. It'll be okay.
I have a button for that. Do you want to try it again?
Yeah.
Okay. One second. Yeah. Yeah, so if you hear a knock on the door upstairs, it might be the ghosts who are coming to repossess your house. Nope, shit.
I'm happy keeping either of those takes.
Fuck. Jeremy, fix that. Anyway, so yeah, stay tuned, I guess, for next week when we have an update about a new 3D ghost coin.
That sound effect is all fucked up, by the way.
It's real loud.
Yeah. it's real, real quiet and real garbled on this end. So
just that's probably fine. Yeah. Jeremy.
I'm sure somewhere in the middle right there.
It's probably there's a pop-up about that. Set up professional audio.
No, don't do that.
No. Now is not the time to start. All right. Okay, well, now that we've gotten the ghost coin update.
All the economics out of the way.
Yeah. You ready for a ghost story?
I am.
By the way, so our social media team has requested that we take all of our funny bits and limit them to 30 seconds.
Okay.
Because they're trying to make very algorithm-friendly clips.
Okay. You will have to let me know when something funny happens.
Okay. But I don't want to take up time by telling you that it's happening. So I'm just going to make a signal.
What's the signal?
You'll know it.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Yeah, I'll see it. Yeah, okay.
It was going to be that, but it doesn't. Does that ever work? Have you ever done that before?
It does not work, actually.
It doesn't work. If I find some tape and put the spoon in my nose, that's the signal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, fuck. We have no signal. Anyway, our Ozark suite continues this week. We're back in the Ozarks, but we are leaving Branson, and we are heading a little bit further north today.
Ooh, okay.
And I'm going to tell you the story of the Castle House.
Oh, all right. No idea.
Have you heard of the Castle House?
I have no idea. No. I'm not as steeped in Ozark lore as you might imagine.
This is a story that actually I've had on my list for a while. It was something I considered doing when we did our Pickney Bend live show.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I was looking for Missouri stories.
Yeah.
A long time ago. So it's just been sitting there, and for reasons that might become clear, I never really decided to do it. But now I needed an Ozark story, and this is one. So, so this is a story of the Castle House of Brumley, Missouri. In 1836, Reverend Jacob Shaw McComb Sr. and his wife Emily purchased a piece of land in the town of Brumley. Now, Brumley, I'm going to guess you have no idea where that is.
I'm not familiar with it. It's not on the, is it on one of the major highways?
It's not on 44.
It's not, okay, then no, I don't know what it is.
No. It is about 15 minutes east of Lake of the Ozarks.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's up there. It's in the foothills of the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. Now, Jacob purchased the property from a woman named Sarah Lee. Mm-hmm. And we don't know anything about her. No records, but it's, you know, it's pretty uncommon, obviously, for a woman to own, I mean, frankly, anything in the early 1800s.
Yeah. Even world famous baker, Sarah Lee. Still, even then, her husband probably was the one.
Yeah. Eli Lee is famously, it's his signature on there. It's her name, but it's his signature. If you look close, it's Eli. So I think there's two, this is not the research talking, this is me talking. I think there are two possibilities here. Either she was married to someone who died and then they had no children. So it's just like, well, you get this land.
Right.
Or, and I think the story might point to this being a real possibility. Not impossible that she is a childless witch.
Oh, that would fill in a lot of blanks for me.
Yeah. Nobody doesn't like childless witches. Mm-hmm. The original version of that. Jingle, but it didn't take.
Everyone took it the wrong way.
So they burned her and then her daughter, Sarah Lee Jr., to take over. So Jacob buys the property from Sarah Lee. Jacob is a farmer, a teacher, and a minister.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Diversified. I like that.
And a minister needs a flock. So he and Emily have 10 children.
Oh, boo. That's
so many children.
That's just, it's way too many.
How many do you think is like the absolute max?
3 from my experience.
How many do you have?
It's exactly 3. Anything more than 3 and it turns into a 1-in-1-out scenario. It's not, there's no.
Oh, Stella, I'm so sorry, but your mom's pregnant. Oh, no.
It's a race against time for you to age 4 years in the next 9 months.
Oh, man. So let's see. They have 10 kids. Only one of them died.
Oh, wow.
So they're stuck with 9 of them.
Yeah, that's...
They played the odds and they lost. Mm-hmm. yeah, John G. McComb died at age 5 weeks.
Oh, well.
So that little bump in the road aside, they had a pretty good run. But let's see. In June 1861, Jacob enlists in the Union Army and goes to fight at the very beginnings of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. He came home 6 months later. Oh. I don't know why.
Which, again, just goes to show you how horrible war is. Really. Honestly.
But they're just going
to
let these people leave after 6 months? Ugh.
More that he was like, man, maybe going home to 9 children isn't such a bad thing.
This is a different form of war. Mm-hmm. One I'm more comfortable with, I think, actually.
I'm at least one of the two bosses in the war at home. This war here, I am not any of the bosses.
So anyway, he's back. And then, I don't know, some time passes. Emily dies when she's 40. Jacob is alone with 9 kids.
He's never alone, actually. No. No. Jacob is alone for that brief millisecond when he blinks his eyes.
Home is where your eyes are open, is what they say. And he obviously remarries immediately to get another woman in that house.
Several women. I mean, it's like there's.
Please, I've come to Mormonism. It just hit me suddenly. Let's see. Jacob's second wife is a woman named Julianne, and together they have 6 more kids.
Oh no!
So now they're up to 15.
God, this guy's like,
he's so bad.
This guy's like got rabbit DNA coming out or something.
Not
I don't know.
His dick shot off in the war. That is not why he's home. But then eventually Julianne dies in Stockton, Kansas, for some reason, at the age of 35.
Yeah. So, yeah, from exhaustion. This is
absolutely.
They have like 75 children at this point.
Oh, man. So now Jacob has 15 kids, and he's like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I need a new wife. So he marries a third time. His wife's name is Eva. Now Eva never lives on the property in Brumley.
Okay. Yeah. She took one look at it and she's like, what is that dirt moving in the field? Oh no, that's not dirt moving. That's the children.
So we don't have a lot of detail about Jacob's life, obviously. He died in Oregon City, Oregon when he was 92.
Oh. Jiminy Christmas.
Now, 1892 is like 21st century, 1,000.
Yeah, absolutely. This explains the insane virility. This is nature saying, we need a lot more of you.
Can you imagine if he hadn't split it off 15 times? He'd have lasted until he was 120. So when Jacob dies, he leaves the home in Missouri to his cousin, John Connor.
Interesting. Life gets very, very, very difficult for John Connor. Give, you know, another 125-ish years or so.
Yeah. John is a freedom fighter from the 21st century. And he's also, at this time, a doctor and a coroner.
Okay.
Seems a little bit like a conflict of interest.
Yeah, I don't know. This is some fox guarding the hen house type stuff here.
So I don't know exactly. I mean, on the one hand, it's good because you know, you're only paying one bill.
Right.
Things go really bad.
Yeah.
That's nice. But he's a Miller County coroner from 1875 to 1881. And so when his cousin Jacob leaves in the house, he's like, God, there's so much space. I mean, this is a house that previously had 17 people living in it. And I think Jacob, is he alone? I don't know. But anyway, they don't have 17 of them. And he's like, what am I going to do with all this space? You have any thoughts?
Well, let's see. He is a medical doctor and a coroner. Mm-hmm. So he has lots of patients coming in and then lots of, you know,
patients going out.
So I think he's going to turn into some sort of a medical facility.
He moves for the living or the dead. Uh-huh. And his apothecary shop onto the property. Mm.
And the original work from home arrangement.
It's pretty nice.
Donald Trump is wanting to send this man back somewhere. We can't have this happen.
Absolutely not. He does indeed perform autopsies there in the house, presumably on the dead patients.
Right. Yeah, of course.
But we've had this before. This was in the story that was in Atchison, Kansas.
I think so. Yes.
Remember the name of that house?
This was the one where they built the grate into the living room floor.
Yes. Yes. Now that was smart. no such note about that happening here, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was a little future looking, you know. That was a little innovative.
That's right. So let's see, here's a quote. He would have both treated patients and prepared bodies on the property. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. So John and his wife Elnora. Eleanor. Mm-hmm. Elnora.
Elnora. Yep. Elnora. Like one of those huge, like, continent-sized weather patterns. That's what she is. Yeah.
Yes, she
is Elnora.
Elnora. And they have three children. Bernice, John Jr., and Lurabelle. Not Lurabelle.
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 Okay. All right. Mm. Okay. These folks were saving money at the birth certificate shop.
It's like a telegraph. Yeah, they do charge by the letter.
$1 a letter? Fuck that. No. You are... Your name is Q, and they got to run on Qs today. And your name is Space. That's what your name is.
Some real Elon Musk shit going on. So eventually, between the three kids and all the dead bodies in the house, there's so many people. And John thinks we need more space. And so they sell the house to a man named John Martin in 1885. John goes by Clark. Mm-hmm. Clark was a merchant, a farmer, and an innkeeper.
Okay. I do love these stories. Everybody has like three jobs. And I don't know if it's as much diversifying or just like constant failure or what exactly it is, you know?
Yeah, it makes it sound like they're all doing these at the same time, but I don't know how you can be a merchant and a farmer and an innkeeper all at once. So it must be... This is the season of life. Right now, you know what? I'm in my merchant era. Tomorrow, maybe farmer. So we think that Clark may have been the one who tore down the original house and then built the new structure that stands on the property today.
Okay.
Clark played the fiddle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
His wife, Franny, played the organ.
Man, so much free time back then.
And sometimes so Franny fiddled Clark's organ.
Mm.
I wrote that one down. I wanted to say
you
that.
You did write that down? Okay.
That one. Yeah, that's that one's fine. Down here. Okay. Sorry, I stepped on you a little bit there, but
no, really totally okay. I was so excited. Totally okay. Yeah, the social media team needs something like this.
Yeah. So. because they did end up having eight children, so they no longer had free time.
Okay.
Two of their children were a pair of twins named Love and Dove.
if you had twins, Clayton.
Oh boy.
Would you do some sort of like associated names or would you do like totally dissociated names?
I would have to do totally dissociated names because that's the only way I would get it straight.
Right.
It's already confusing enough. Mm-hmm. I can't confuse myself anymore.
They have the same DNA. It's like
I can't call them Brick and Brack because I will forget which one is Brick and which one is Brack instantly. Although I think that if you call them names like Brick and Brack, then it is easier to just go with it. Mm-hmm. If you mix them up,
right,
and be like, it's one vowel. It doesn't matter. Everything else is the same. Like, I don't know. Who do you want to be today?
Yeah,
great. You're Brick. I don't care. What would you do?
I'd probably give them very close to identical names, like Laura and Lara, like that type of thing. Like
or Laura,
you know, yeah, or Laura and Laura. But I always find it fascinating. If you have identical twins, like identical twin.
The scariest of all twins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That apparently a really, really, really stressful part of your life is not mixing them up. Like, that's, yeah.
No shit. Like, I can't keep my own children straight, and they're 2 years apart.
Yeah. I've talked to people that have twins, and like, and they'll, you know, like, dress one primarily in like the color red and the other one primarily in the color blue. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. They're sort of matching together. And they're like, no.
That's so this I is can a keep label. Them
fucking straight. This is. If I never take my eyes off of them long enough that they can totally disrobe and switch clothes, because they will do that.
Uh huh. This has been a great week for David to give us some smart labels money. Mm-hmm. Could have had a really good use case for smart labels this week, but sorry you slept on this one, David. I think there is no chance that any pair of identical twins in history, no matter where in the world, no matter what time in history, there's no chance that either of them is exactly the way that they came out of the way you named them.
Right.
You've mixed those children up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
at been at least 100 times.
Yeah. It's been a game of like ball under the cup their whole life.
Yeah. If you are an identical twin, you have no idea who you really are.
Yeah. Like, you're Lara. I don't think so. No, I think you're Lara. No, I'm Lura. No, I'm pretty sure you're Lara.
All right. I know. Lura had the birthmark under her foot. We both have birthmarks under our foot. I fucking know.
Yeah. That's fine. You're both Nobody Lura. Has feet now.
Now, if we had thought this through, we would have taken off only one child's feet.
Which one wants to get maimed in the face? Which one wants to get maimed in the hand? That's what I'm asking today.
We've run out of clothes that are different colors, so it's our only option left to us. Anyway, speaking of infanticide, Love and Dove were stillborn.
Boy, do I feel bad about the last 10 minutes of conversation. You could have given me some sort of a sign. Oh. You could have put something in the chat.
Oh, my. The best part about this is I have a little line break here in the notes, because that what I thought would happen is I would tell you there was a pair of twins named Love and Dove, and you would make some dumb joke.
Right.
And then the next line is presumably named so unconventionally because they were both stillborn, and you would feel bad.
Right.
I didn't know it would go that far.
Oh.
Now, was that 30 seconds? Because that would be great for
Boy,
Instagram.
Boy,
Oh, my God. Anyway. So, Love and Dove were then buried a few hundred feet from the house.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it was hard for the Martins to live in the house where they had experienced such a monumental heartbreak that Patrick takes very seriously. And
I do.
Would never have made jokes about I didn't, if he knew otherwise.
I didn't meet any of these people. So,
after 8 years, they sell the house.
Hmm.
And so in 1893, the house is purchased by the Miller County Postmaster, a man named Clifford Thompson.
Ooh, Cliff, a postman. Big Cheers fan, I would imagine.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that's who he's named after, is this guy. and there's no word on whether or not Clifford understood that Love and Dove were buried in the backyard.
Okay.
So it is weird to bury your children back there and then just leave that move.
Right. Yes. That is.
I would feel bad if it was cats.
Yes. Yeah.
This is more than that, I think.
Yeah. You should have seen our trunk driving down here from Chicago. It was just like topsoil. Just bags and bags of topsoil.
Let's see. Where are we? Okay. And we think that Clifford may have been the one who tore down the original house and built the new house structure that still stands on the property today.
Okay. Okay.
Clifford's wife was a woman named Belle.
Mm-hmm.
And they had three kids while living on the property, Norma, Neil, and Carol.
All right. So finally, we're starting to get some normal names, amounts of children. Everyone's alive, right?
One job. Postmaster.
Yeah. Boom. Not like postmaster and brain surgery and gigolo, like nothing like that. Okay.
Yeah, he's not like my postman.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Who gives a whole different meaning to the word package. Something happens though to Belle, and Clifford's second wife, Emma, never lives on the property. I don't know why. He doesn't stay on the property too long either. So he bought it in 1893. In 1901, He sells a house to a man named James Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
James is a co-owner of a nearby store in town.
Okay.
And we think that James may have been the one who tore down the original house and built the new house structure that still stands on the property today.
So how many people do you think tore down this house at this point?
Well, only one of them.
Okay, right. Yeah. So is this
don't know which one.
Is this, yeah, it's like a Usual Suspects type thing. Like, you're the kind of guy that tears down houses and rebuilds them with the structure that we know today. But you are also the type of person that does this.
That's correct.
Okay.
So three. There's one of these three.
Mm-hmm.
James and his wife, Victoria, had four kids.
Mm-hmm.
Clifford, Sophia, Clyde, and Cora.
I'm sorry, another Clifford enters this story? Mm-hmm. My notes are a mess. My notes are a mess at this point.
You're not making a family tree. I think this one actually, it's not noted here, but Clifford Thompson sells it to James Thompson. They may be related.
James
names a son after his brother or cousin.
Or maybe he sells it to his own father. Now he's the son living in the house.
Very possible.
And he wears a little suit now.
He has a little cork-headed doll that he carries around. Mm-hmm. And it's real cute.
Yep. Yeah, I'm actually liking where this is going now.
Let's see. So they only own the house for 6 years. So in 1907, they sell the house to a man named Joseph McWilliams.
This real estate market must have been on fire. I mean,
it's amazing.
This is just great.
Joseph is a miller
and
the foreman of the post office.
Oh.
Hmm. And the owner of an electric company.
Okay. So we're going in the wrong direction.
We're regressing a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. He's also the proud owner of the first car in Brumley, Missouri.
You don't want to own the first car, you know. You want to.
You didn't want to own the first telephone. Now you don't want to own the first car. You're not an early adopter type, huh?
I mean, with the new iPhone, that's pretty well established stuff. But car, again, this is terrifying shit. Little explosions going on inside the car hundreds of times a second. This is not something you want in your driveway.
Yeah. When did they change how cars work?
What do you mean? How they work?
Like little explosions. That's old fashioned. What do they do now?
That's what we do now.
My car does that?
Your car does that, yes. I promise you.
Fuck, yeah. I should not be driving. Absolutely not. So this is Joseph. We think Joseph may have been the one who tore down the original house and built the new house structure that still stands on the property today.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So another suspect slides into view.
Uh-huh.
Is this Benicio del Toro? Which one is this? Is this Kevin Spacey?
This is not Kevin Spacey. I don't think this is Kevin Spacey. What's his name? Is it Pollock?
Kevin Pollock.
Kevin Pollock, yeah. This is Kevin Pollock energy, I think.
Yeah, I can see that.
He and his wife, Sarah, had four kids.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Iva.
I like that.
Irene.
Les.
Deceased child name unknown. And Dewey.
Okay. All right. This is the normal family right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they own the house for 9 years. Mm-hmm. And in 1916, they sell the house to a man named Clyde Pemberton.
Okay.
Okay.
This guy's going to stick. This guy's going to stick.
Yes.
Okay.
It's 1916, so it's time to get modern.
Yeah.
Clyde goes by Fred.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't go by Clyde either. No, that's
no, absolutely not.
Terrible.
He's a farmer, a salesman, and an oil field worker.
Farmer, salesman, and oil. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I can see how those would gel a little bit.
Hey, farms oil.
Right. He farms. They found oil on the farm. Boom. Now I'm an oil farm worker because it's my farm. And what am I going to do with this oil? I can't drink it. At least not all of it.
I tried it. Didn't work. Yeah. Didn't work out for me or my children. They're gone now.
Or the third child specifically. But, you know. Is this still him? This is not still him, is it?
This is a different one.
We're on like the 25th family. I'm having a really hard time figuring out what's going on. Which one's Cliff?
So Clyde went by Fred. His wife was named Sarah. She went by Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
And they had five kids.
All of these people are on the run from the federal government. That's all I can think of at this point.
Ozark story.
This house sure does change hands a lot, but the signature on the deed looks really similar each time.
So Sarah goes by Carrie. So Clyde goes by Fred. Sarah goes by Carrie. They have five kids. Freddie, Clyde, Ray, Jared, and John, who was run over at age six.
What kind of confusing ass house His name's Clyde. He goes by Fred. He names his two sons Clyde and Fred. And then he names a third son something different. And he's like, God, this is really hard to remember. Like, I'm Clyde and Fred. You're Clyde. You're Fred. And John, God, I think it's John. John? Right. Yeah. Oh, he got run over? Oh. Oh, fuck. All
right. Well, it's one less to remember.
Wait off my mind. Okay.
Oh, man. Now, they only owned the house for about 3 years. So in 1920.
Exciting 3 years for them.
Oh, sure is. They sell to 1920 to a man named Charles Short. Mm-hmm. Now, Charles is a teacher, a banker, and a politician.
Okay, those don't really go together real well. Teacher and banker? from my experience, those are the
having
opposites.
No money. Now I'll try having all the money. Mm-hmm. Then I'll try taking other people's money. Hello, I want to be your mayor. His wife, Cora, was also a teacher, and they had two kids, Layla and Edith. In 1928, though, they sold the property to a doctor named William Duncan Dixon. Mm-hmm. Dr. Dixon did pretty well for himself. He and his wife, Grace, even had a hired maid, hired hand at the house.
Okay.
Whose name was also Grace.
It gets more Ozark as we go through the family lineage here.
Now, what I will say on behalf of Dr. Dixon here is this is either obviously very confusing or this could, depending on his relationship with this handmaid, it could be pretty convenient.
This is either very confusing or very not confusing. Exactly. If you know what I mean.
Dr. Dixon is indeed. He and Grace had two kids, James and Mary. Mm-hmm. But the good doctor does not own the house for long because he dies of a heart attack in the house in 1930.
I bet. Two chicks.
Got a grace for home and a grace for pleasure. Mm-hmm. You're not going to last.
Too busy Duncan and Dixon, and he's out.
Ownership of the house then passes to his son, James Dixon. Mm-hmm. I think his widow still lives there, and they're like, shouldn't I? She's like, shouldn't I own this house? He's like, no, it goes to the boy. So that's neat. Now, James was a mailman, a prison guard, and a timekeeper.
Okay. All right. Can you explain what a timekeeper is at this point in time? What year is this?
This is 1930.
1930. Okay. So timekeeper. That's a profession.
It could be
right
like
now.
Setting clocks like down in the town square.
Okay. Like a lamplighter type thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Someone's got to wind the fucking town square clock. Because if that's off, all your gunfights are going to be off. Mm-hmm. If you don't know when it's noon, then people are just going to be just showing up at embarrassingly early times for their gunfight.
It's like when somebody lights off fireworks on New Year's Eve at like 11:45. You're like, no. Buy a clock.
You need a timekeeper.
You and I went to a New Year's Eve party one time without a clock. Do you remember that?
No.
It was with that really rough Columbia crew. We were over at, I don't know, that was over at your place with like a mole and all those folks. And we had a New Year's party. We celebrated New Year's together. And it got to be like 11:30 or something like that.
Yeah.
And there
was a fancy party.
I think it was a fancy party. And we didn't have a television.
Right.
And we realized suddenly that the clock on the wall was off by like 45 minutes.
I do remember. Now it's coming back to me.
And this was back in the days before you could like trust the clock on your cell phone. It wasn't synchronized to anything. It was just you set the clock on your phone.
And if you didn't charge your phone, then it was like all fucked.
Yeah. So I think we just like took the wall clock and just set it to like a minute before midnight and then just put the batteries back into it and said, okay, here we go.
I think we started hearing people cheering outside and we're like, I think it's time. I think we're doing it.
I'm pretty sure we can start firing off the pistols, gentlemen. Let's go outside.
Oh man, see, we needed a timekeeper. Mm-hmm. So James's wife is named Leela. She goes by Chloe. Mm-hmm. And they have four children: Bonnie, Walter, mm-hmm. who they called Dude, James Jr. or Jimmy, and Helen.
I would also love to go by Dude from now on, if you don't mind.
We can make that happen. It's okay. I'll put that in the Discord and it'll word'll get around. Mm-hmm. Now, James was an alcoholic, had some pretty serious anger issues.
There's no way it took this long to find an alcoholic in the Ozarks. There's been like 25 men that live in this house.
This is what I'm saying. Like, first one. For that group, he's the alcoholic, so he's really bad.
He's like the meanest lion at the zoo. It's like one of them has to be, but that one is really, really mean.
That's right. He is very undue. So one day he gets fired from his job at the post office. And the next day he shows back up there real drunk and with a gun.
Oh, no.
So he's threatening to kill a man named Audie Warren. Because Audie was the one who had gotten him fired.
Okay. But did he tell Audie he was going to kill him like a specific time of day or something like that?
And Audie, you just wait. What is that clock right? Is that clock right?
No, that one's fast. So you just wait a little bit.
Wait until tomorrow. Now, looking for Audie, Dr. Myron Jones just happened to be inside the post office at this time, and he manages to somehow disarm James.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So Dr. Jones takes a gun, and he brings it back to Chloe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I definitely want to return that to the family.
For sure. Yeah. So that's probably an heirloom. But Chloe is like, where the fuck did he get this gun? And so Chloe then sells the gun back to its original owner.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
yeah, it all works out.
A little bow on that, little happy ending right there. I'm sure this whole family just rides off into the sunset together.
And I bet no one else ever got shot with that gun ever again. So at this point, James is like, okay, I think my life is a wreck. And I think we should probably sell this house and go make some different life choices here. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Jones just happens to be standing there and he's like, I'll buy it. So he does.
I will buy it for one gun. Oh, what a good deal.
This gun looks familiar. So now Dr. Jones is perhaps the first serious person to own the house. He is a former president of the American College of Osteopathic Pediatricians.
But he's not the first doctor to own the house. That's
correct, but the first serious doctor.
It's the first That's doctor important. That does not both do surgery and then perform a postmortem on his own surgeries. So
yeah, he's the first doctor not to double dip in the house. Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. If you're a doctor, you're not allowed to even single dip. Did you know that?
I did. I saw a movie about that one time. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. I think it was that was how it started.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Dr. Jones, he was a serious guy. He treated erysipelas. Erysipelas.
Yep. It's a skin condition. Yep.
How do you know that? You have it.
You can look it up.
I did, and it's a bacterial skin infection.
Fuck yes!
It causes a red raised rash, also known as St. Anthony's Fire.
I figured it was 50-50 shot, because it's either on the skin or it's not. So.
It's either outside or inside, so pretty
close. All the ones on the outside are skin conditions. All the ones on the inside, kind of a mixed bag. But.
So he treated that. He's treated a scarlet fever outbreak in 1936.
Oh,
Treated a polio outbreak in 1946.
Mm.
So he's like a real doctor.
Yeah.
He made some cool improvements to the property, including a 9,000 gallon cistern under the house.
Okay.
Pretty good. Pretty useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people, I guess locally were like, man, that cistern is awesome. You're awesome. You know what? You should be mayor.
You're the first person that has gone batshit crazy in this house. I don't know how.
I don't know, but please lead us. Yeah. So they elect him mayor of Brumley in 1936. Now, Jones lives for a good long while. He doesn't die until 1989. So we're picking things up here.
I would say so.
Almost an hour into the story. We're picking up. We're jumping some time. Now, I will note he did sell the house in 1947. So we're going to go back through there a little bit.
Okay.
But we got a lot of owners still. So we're going to move through the next.
There's a lot faster. Of owners still.
I think we're about halfway through in terms of not joking. So we will go a little faster.
Okay. That's fine.
If you don't mind. Next came Charles Bass, who had five kids, one of whom was named Marble. Let's see.
I know exactly how that turns out. That's the fifth child of five, and that's when you let the other four kids vote on a name. This
is the Bodie McBoatface of children.
This is like whenever Henry, our old boss, let his kids vote on the name of the dog, and they named the dog. Do you remember what they named the dog? No. Sky Dog. That was the name of the dog. That's right.
Which, to be fair, is a cool name.
It's a great name for a dog, but that's the kind of name you get when you let the kids vote on the name of the dog.
Oh, man. Henry and Jessica's parenting style, I can't even second imagine. That. It's just the best. So there's Marble. Then came William Sullivan, who went by Bert.
Mm-hmm.
He was a barber and was reported to smell like rose talcum powder.
Okay.
He died in the house on June 27th, 1963, from complications of arthritis.
Oh, man. That is a way to go right there. Imagine someone whose like body's getting crumpled up like a foil ball inside of the house.
I can't reach food. I can't grab food. I guess I'm dying here. I don't know.
My glass-filled bones are shattering as I reach for a glass of water.
Horrible. Now, his wife, Norma, she went by Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
She continued to live in the house until her death in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
She also died in the house from old age / dementia.
Oh. Okay.
So they had a couple of rough ends there. When Cecil died, her children inherited the house. They sold it to Emerson Alley.
Mm-hmm.
A-L-L-E-E. Mm-hmm. Emerson and his wife Myra lived there for 4 years until Emerson died of a heart attack in the house.
Okay.
How many people do you think died in your house?
In my house?
Yeah.
I would say fewer than four, I would say. Our house is owned by a woman for like a long time before we bought it. She bought it back in the 1970s. So I would say, and she, you know, she was alive. I shook her hand, so she's fine.
Okay.
I mean, she's, I don't know if she's dead now, but
sure. not my problem now.
Yeah, exactly.
not my ghost, not my problem.
But before that, the house has been, it's like a 100-year-old house. I'd say fewer than four people have died in this house.
That's pretty good.
Well, what about you? You live in a duplex, right?
This is brand new. I hope no one has died. It's only like 15 years old, so.
Yeah, so probably fewer.
Probably not.
Fewer than four, right?
I would say, I fucking hope so. Paul and I moved into our house in Des Plaines, we were talking to our neighbor, like the second week we were there, this old guy who lived like his side yard came right to our backyard, and he would just talk all the time. Nice guy, but he just kept talking. And he was like, oh, I'm so glad someone bought this house. I didn't think anyone would, you know, the last owner died right there in your kitchen. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, fell and knocked his head on the counter and bled out on the floor. I was like, Jesus Christ, really? He goes, yeah, it was all in the news. You can go look it up. And I did, and it sure did happen.
That's great. That's
so wonderful. That was cool. That was, like a month before we bought it. Well, this is fun.
This explains the slightly different lighting in some of the staging photos. This tracks now.
Yeah. New floors in here, we noticed. That's, okay.
Ooh, I got that new linoleum smell.
So Myra sells the house to Omega Mobile Home Sales.
Ah, wonderful. Finally, the corporations have stepped in. We're trying to bring some sense to this.
Which is not a mobile home, so I don't know what's going on here. But they own it for 3 years. They then sell it to Doug and Judith Thompson in 1991. They sell it to Ray and Barbara Bartholomew in 1997. They sell it to Steve and Angela O'Hare in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2013, Angela O'Hare sells it to Nick Sacco and Marcy Hootner, who I believe are married.
Okay.
So that's the history of the Castle House, and now the story can start.
Oh, thank goodness. All right.
Okay.
My drink is gone, just so you're aware.
At this point, the house is more than 100 years old. It's not in great shape.
And it's had, many, many more than 100 residents, which is hard to do. More than one a year is hard to do.
Yes. It's had over 100 residents and over 200 names.
Mm-hmm.
Nick and Marcy, they decide to restore the house. And they're the ones who start calling this the Castle House.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you a picture here. You'll see why they call it the Castle House, because it looks like a castle.
Oh, yeah. It's got a turret.
The only castle-like thing about it is this crummy turret.
True.
So that's the house. I don't know. Some, the original people, they had so many, I guess that was a different house. I don't remember who tore down the house, rebuilt it, but someone may have had 15 kids in here. Anyway, so that's the Castle House. So they restore it. Their plan is to open the Castle House as a bed and breakfast.
Okay.
And I guess it's close enough to Lake of the Ozarks where that makes sense.
Because
otherwise, I'm not out here.
Yeah, who's going to Brumley to stay at a little suburban castle?
You could.
I could.
Not that far. 2 hours? 2 hours or less from you. Amy, pack your bags. We're going to stay in a castle tonight.
Both of us will probably survive it. I do not know.
So just to give you Nick Sacco's vibe, here's a quote that I found from an article from the Center Daily Times. Just down the road from the guy who with several hundred junked lawnmowers in his yard is another guy in a haunted house, and he has made the whole town mad.
He has. The guy with the hundreds of junked out lawnmowers isn't making anybody as mad as a ghost guy?
I guess that's the point of this weird lead. The anger that townsfolk have at Nick apparently comes from when they were scouting filming locations for the show Ozark. Mm-hmm. And which, of course, is about meth in the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Sacco posted online about how they should use Brumley. And in part of that post, he wrote, "Go, Brumley. Your reputation precedes you." and people got so mad.
What?
And it's funny because they're like, everyone's mad because he's calling Brumley like a meth head capital of the world.
Yeah.
And everyone they interviewed for this article was like, there is a lot of meth here, but you don't say that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, his neighbor started showing up in his driveway and like screaming at him from his driveway. Like, they get threatening phone calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want to piss off a meth head. They have all kinds of time.
All kinds of time and zero inhibition.
Mm-hmm.
Nick's wife, Marcy, didn't really care that everyone was treating them badly. Here's a quote from her. When we got here, they called us the millionaires because we came in an RV. So anyway, Nick and Marcy, they turned it into a bed and breakfast. As they're restoring it, though, they start noticing some kind of strange things. Doors would lock themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Empty rocking chairs would rock themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Beds would unmake themselves.
Clocks would clock themselves.
And suddenly this is a Dr. Seuss story. Obviously, you'll remember that many people have died in this house, and it served as the coroner's lab for several years. And there are newborn babies buried in the background that you made big jokes about.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember.
So Nick and Marcy decide this house might be haunted. That was really clinched for them when they saw the dead woman crying at the top of the stairs.
Oh, and they didn't know her?
No, it's not one of theirs.
Oh, okay.
You may remember in the mid-1800s, John Connor inherited the house.
Oh, you remember John Connor inheriting the house.
Yeah. I thought you would remember that one. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention this earlier, but we think that John may have been the one who tore down the house and built the structure that stands there
today. Oh, was it John? Okay.
May have been John.
Okay.
We're still not sure. It could be one of six people.
Right, sure.
What we do know is that whether he built the new house or he was improving the original house, at one point he bought a grand staircase from London, England, and had it shipped over.
I did not know you could buy staircases wholesale mm-hmm. and have them shipped.
I think they had it made. They had a carpenter in London make it.
Right. The whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And ship it over.
Yeah. Okay. I mean.
You're forgetting that he's a doctor and a coroner. So business is pretty good. I mean, he one of his businesses directly informs the second business.
Yeah.
This is a grift and he's doing it great. He's got British staircase money. So he orders it, and they're very proud of it. So one night, the Connors are getting ready to host a very big, very fancy party, and John's running around getting ready. He runs upstairs to get dressed, and he finds his wife, Elnora, dead at the top of the stairs.
Oh, it's going to ruin the party.
It's not going to make a fun party.
It's going to... God, she knew this party was so important to him, and this is when she wanted to kill herself at the top of the stairs?
Fucking typical.
His beautiful stairs.
Beautiful stairs. You know, probably bled all over them.
I imported these stairs from somewhere.
England. London, England.
I cut them up in 100 pieces and reassembled them in the house because I didn't realize how stairs work. And now you've killed yourself at the threshold of my beautiful stairs.
Wow. Well, you know what? When I drag your body out of here, I am hitting your head on every one of those stairs. How do you like that?
I'm not even going to do the autopsy on your body. I don't care.
Well, that may be true because, ironically, we don't know what caused the death of the coroner's wife.
You see?
So earlier I noted that, you know, there were so many bodies that John was like, we need more space. One of those dead bodies was his wife's.
Okay.
So because Elnora never... Oh. I don't know what that note says. Anyway, but Elnora has never left the staircase. When the new house was built, if that wasn't the new house, then the staircase was saved and came with it.
Okay, so they knew. They could tell.
They could tell. Like, they're like this
the
one.
Tag. He left the tags on it. He's like, this is important. This is pretty expensive. Yeah. Yeah.
They started tearing it down, and then this woman screamed at them. Said, leave this up! Like, okay. So to this day, people still report seeing a woman in a fancy dress standing at the top of the stairs and crying.
Hmm.
Apparently, she cries so loudly you can hear it from outside the house.
Sounds annoying. Okay.
So Nick and Marcy, they're trying to turn this into a bed and breakfast, which is going to be a hard sell with all these fucking ghosts around.
Right. But an easy sell to ghost tourists. So you have to figure out which way you want to go.
They make a slight adjustment to the plans, and they open the castle house haunted bed and breakfast.
There we go. Okay.
Uh-huh. It's a real Missouri thinking. That
different checkbox on Airbnb right there. Just one more checkbox. Yeah.
Apparently, this is a good enough shtick because that was in 2014, and it's still operating today as a haunted bed and breakfast in Wilmy, Missouri.
Wonderful.
Now, in April 2016, one guest left a note telling Nick that he'd been awoken by whispering in the middle of the night. He shined a flashlight around and saw, quote, a white column of plasm.
I'm just going to click the flashlight back off, and I'm going to go right to bed. I don't need to know anything about what's going on with the plasm in the corner.
That's called nocturnal emission, my friend. Let's see. They've had more than 24 couples pack up and leave in the middle of the night.
Oh.
And based on all the sickly-looking ghosts that started appearing in the backyard, they think there might be a mass grave back there.
Okay.
Marcy refuses to stay in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it gets too much for her to even own the house. So she's like, Nick, we're selling this fucking house. It's too haunted.
Okay.
Our haunted bed and breakfast is too haunted. So in 2018, they sell it to Dr. Stephen and Judy Skinner. Steve Skinner is a dermatologist. Dr. Skinner.
Yeah.
Dermatologist.
Yes.
Skin. Yeah. Skin doctor.
Right.
Yep. Skin Skinner. Doctor. You don't like that? That's nothing for you?
Lots of skin doctors live in this house. It's a weird thing to attract. It's a pretty weird thing to attract.
That's true.
I don't know if somebody was trying to describe like a bed and breakfast to me, they were trying to like kind of spook me out. If they said, "Ooh, it's haunted," or for some reason it attracts nothing but skin disease experts, I would probably that would probably scare me more than the ghost thing.
I would take the haunted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'll be sleeping on the shower curtain on the floor. Thank you very much.
Steve is a dermatologist. They still run it as a haunted bed and breakfast. They have also seen so many ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Steve says he's seen lots of full body apparitions. Most of them are monochromatic or black and white, but one of them was the color of a quote normal person.
Must have been very old before, color.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Sepia toned ghosts. One day they saw two ghost children playing in the backyard.
Okay.
And when the Skinners came out and saw them, the children stopped playing, turned to look at them, and then called out to Steve and Judy by their names.
Oh, that's nice.
That's horrifying.
Grandkids. Oh, that's grandkids right there. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
No, beggars can't be choosers. You can't. Yeah.
And of course, they've heard the cries and screams of Elnora.
Right.
The very first night the Skinners stayed at the castle house, Steve was woken by five loud bangs from inside his bedroom closet door.
Oh.
He grabbed a shotgun and searched the closet. Then he searched the house, doesn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
He goes back to sleep. And then after about an hour, he's woken up again by invisible hands pushing him into his pillow and a man's voice hissing in his ear.
This is the worst massage I've ever gotten in my entire life, but I did pay the $40. So I'm just going to.
And what is that column of white plasm? I don't know what's happening. Steve was also woken up to the sounds of a little girl giggling and humming beside him.
That looks good.
Guests often see shadow people and hear phantom noises. Sometimes they get touched by ghosts. The Skinners also have a collection of, quote, haunted household items.
Oh.
Like dolls, trinkets, and human bones.
Okay. Do they, like, from the house or do they just collect them?
I think they collect them.
That's not great. That's not what you want to do. Yeah.
No. Now, what you want in a bed and breakfast house?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Our human bone collection is getting a little thin.
So for the last several years, they've been doing deep dives into the area and the property to learn more about the history. And most of what we've heard from today is from their website.
Mm-hmm.
Here are some things they've discovered that they don't know where to put in the timeline just yet.
Mm-hmm.
Three fun facts.
Wham!
There's a cave nearby called Bone Cave.
Guess
why it's called that?
Because it's very popular with all the teenagers.
Ha! In nope. July 19... No, sorry. Nope. Oh, it's sorry. It's human bones.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Chock-a-block with human bones.
Mm, it's a shame.
In July of 71, there was a murder-suicide 500 yards from the property.
That's really far. That's like restraining order far. That's not that close.
That's true. It's five football fields. Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. There's probably a fucking murder-suicide 300 yards from this place.
They have to tell you when you move in what the closest murder-suicide is to the property. It's part of the realtor agreement.
And there is, in fact, a mass grave behind the house. It was a 1918 Spanish flu epidemic grave.
Oh, how'd they squeeze that in?
Well, there's
actually happening. Yeah.
There's also a second mass grave behind the house.
Oh, okay.
And this one's a pioneer graveyard. And the quote from the Skinners is, "We are still trying to get more information about this."
Mm-hmm. That's got to be so embarrassing when you're trying to dig your mass grave and you're like, "Hang on, guys. We need to scooch over about 20 feet. I found another mass grave." I don't want to stir anything up. I don't want to stir up any spirits. Let's just start fresh 20 feet over this way.
But this was the perfect place for the mass grave. I know.
I know.
Obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
Oh, man. And that is the story of the Haunted Castle House in Brumley, Missouri.
You should go.
You should go.
No, we should go. We should totally go.
You and me together?
Yeah, you should come back to Missouri someday. And then we'll go to the Brumley House.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm liking it not in Missouri. It's kind of nice.
You can sneak around from the Kansas side. Just sneak in.
Okay, that's good. Okay, yeah. I'll do all they're distracted with the Super Bowl. I'll just go bloop right in. Any questions? This has been a long one.
No, I have no questions. No. All my questions have been satisfied.
Great. All right. Well, friends, listen, if you like the show, you should tell your friends about it so they can like the show also. It would be really helpful for us. You can follow us on social. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We're on the TikTok as long as TikTok is here with us. And you can also join us on the Discord link. It's our Discord. I'll put the link in the chat. It's really fun there. And if you want more of this, you can check out Ghost Plus. The new Ghost Plus episodes this month, we have our Stony Hollow Road. It's a little ghost story in Iowa where Patrick has been for some reason to this town. And we do the Smith Show, which is like this show, but less ghosts, where I tell our producer Ryan about the alien crash of Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Huh, it's real Missouri theme here. So please, go like and rate and review and tell your friends and follow us on social and we'll see you over there. And that's going to do it for us this week. Let's see. Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team is Kai Valonis, Sam Murdoch, and Jen Jones. And our merchandise team is Fox and Quill Studio. They're doing some really fun work. We're very excited about. Go check them out on Instagram at Fox and Quill Studio. And thank you to all of them, and thank you to all of you. And listen, in the meantime, don't do autopsies in your living room, or you will almost certainly become the next subject of Is This a Ghost?